Good morning. Welcome to The Scoop. I'm Janelle Irwin, senior editor for Florida Politics with Evan Donovan, anchor and political reporter for WFLA News Channel 8. Sean Canaan is running the tech and wrangling the phones today. If you'd like to get in on the queue, the number to call is 813-239-9663. Or you can email us at dj@wmnf.org. Or you can also text your comments or questions to 813-433-0885. On the slate today, we'll be speaking with Tony Montalto and April Shentrup of the group Stand With Parkland, an anti-school violence group organized in the wake of the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas tragedy that unfolded on Valentine's Day of 2018. With school already back in session in many Florida counties and set to resume in the coming days and others, now is a great time to discuss school safety as well as what officials, activists, and politicians are doing to prevent school tragedies. Florida lawmakers are set to head back to work next month during a series of interim committee weeks. The first round is scheduled for September 20th through the 24th, when lawmakers will begin early deliberations on proposed legislation for the 2022 session. As with every year, school safety will undoubtedly be on the agenda, and Tony and April can shed some light on what their group will be looking for this year, both in Tallahassee and beyond. April, Tony, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us today.
Absolutely. Thanks for taking the time. Can we just start with an update on where school safety measures currently stand as students head back into the classroom this year? I'll let whoever sure. wants to take that ball run with it.
Sure. I'll start. After the tragedy that took my daughter, Gina, and April's daughter, Carmen, and the other 15 wonderful souls. Florida has made great strides to improve the safety of our public schools for both students and staff members. However, that doesn't mean that more has to be done. So we've been working every session since the tragedy to bring on better changes. We've worked with especially Chris Latvala, who has been chair of the House Education Committee. He's been a phenomenal ally and advocate for our students. We've also paid very close attention to the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas Public Safety Commission, which was established by then Governor Scott to research the tragedy and make legislative recommendations on what needs to be done. So they really have been moving forward. Every year, some form of school safety has been passed since the tragedy. Last year, we were successful in passing Senate Bill 590, School Safety is the title. And one of the most important features that we pushed for on that was the requirement to notify parents if there's a threat to the schools, a threat to school transportation, or a threat to a school-sponsored event.
Now, just to follow up on that really quick, Tony, as a mom who has kids in public school, well, just one now, I was already receiving notifications when there were potential threats. How did that really change? Was that just a district-by-district choice prior to that legislation, or how did that work?
Yes, sadly, in our civil litigation after the tragedy, the judge ruled that the school district had no duty to warn parents that there was a threat to their children in school. I can tell you for sure, and I'm sure April will agree, had we known there was a threat of an active shooter at our child's school, we would have made different choices about where they went to school. So this was about giving parents the information they need to make good choices. So although your school district chose to do the right thing, our school district did not.
April,
so now it's a state law.
April, anything you'd like to add to that?
Yes. In addition to alerting parents about threats to schools, it also includes weapons brought on campus, which was another thing that, you know, we as parents didn't know that there were weapons being brought on campus and things like that. So we think that this is a good step in prevention, making sure that parents and students and staff know what's going on in the school that they're attending so they can make better decisions to keep their children and family members safe.
You know, of course, with students resuming classes again under the threat of COVID-19, we know that last year saw a pretty big uptick in mental health issues, no doubt fueled by the stress of a global pandemic, a lot of disruption to normal learning, many kids conducting classes from home or other remote locations. Now, while most kids will be back to school in person this year without the robust virtual options that were available last year, surely those effects can still linger. What are your concerns, if you want to take this, April, for this school year as we continue to navigate these just horribly difficult times?
Yes. Going back to Senate Bill 590 that was passed last year, which goes into effect for the school year, it does talk about really beefing up and improving the mental health support that students are receiving in schools. So Stand With Parkland really takes a three-prong approach in school safety, not just the school safety practices like securing the school campus, but also improving mental health services for students, making sure that they feel safe in schools. And again, we know COVID is a big safety issue, but you know there is still an immediate threat of possibly a school shooting or things happening to harm students at school. So we really want to make sure that, you know, the mental health supports are there. And then in addition to that, also responsible firearms ownership, making sure that, you know, again, the rise in COVID last year was also a rise in gun sales. So we want to make sure that, you know, students don't have easy access to those firearms. And if they are considering harming themselves or others, that procedures are taken place to prevent those from happening.
Tony, anything you want to add to that?
Sure. Since the tragedy, Stand With Parkland has been working with the National Threat Assessment Center, which is part of the U.S. Secret Service. They put out a report in 2019, which we helped promote as we toured the country with them as part of their team. Max Schachter, Ryan Petty, and myself, we traveled to Washington, Chicago, Los Angeles, and finally brought it back home to Miami, which was their report on protecting America's schools. In that report, they talked about the data and the research they had done. And one of the conclusions they had come to is that many targeted school attacks occur after breaks in attendance. Back then, they referred to summer vacations, returning after suspensions. But clearly, COVID has given more students the largest break they've ever had in attendance. And we know that sadly, some children were not at home in the best of environments. They were denied services they were receiving prior to this. So Stand With Parkland, along with the National Threat Assessment Center, has tried to remind people that there are still threats to our schools. We encourage administrators, teachers, school professionals, law enforcement officers, and SROs, anybody who comes in contact with the children, to keep an eye out for those that are stressed so that we can not only identify them, but then get them the help they need before they resort to violence. That report on protecting America's schools is available at standwithparkland.org under our resources tab. And we suggest that people take a look at that, especially at a minimum, the executive summary in the beginning.
You are listening.
And I'd also, I'd also like to add.
Go ahead, April.
I'd also like to add that another resource that schools and parents and others can look into in regards to school safety is another partnership that we've had with the federal government, and that's schoolsafety.gov. It's a website that really talks about how to secure a school, provide mental health supports, do a risk assessment on the school to see, you know, what things they can immediately do, low cost, no cost, to improve school safety. And again, make sure that students feel safe when they come back to school. And that is through partnership of Department of Education, Department of Health and Human Services, Department of Homeland Security, and Department of Justice. So instead of having to go through each different site, now anyone can go to schoolsafety.gov and get that information at the touch of their fingertips.
You're listening to The Scoop on 88.5 WMNF. If you'd like to get into the conversation today, please call 813-239-9663, or you can email dj@wmnf.org. Tony Montalto and April Shentrup joining us today on the show. First of all, Tony, April, I can't imagine the pain that you and your families have been through. I thank you so much for devoting your lives to student safety. We often hear after a mass shooting that it's not a time to politicize the tragedy and that we'll talk about solutions later. Unfortunately, we went through such a spate there in the past few years where it seemed like there was a shooting every few months in a school, or certainly a mass shooting every few months. That seemed to have slowed with the pandemic, and that maybe is one good thing to come out of the pandemic. But I wonder how you get people to pay attention to an issue that is not front of mind anymore, particularly when the pandemic is what everyone seems to be dealing with now. But we know we could just be any breaking news situation away from hearing about some horrific mass shooting somewhere else in the country.
Well, that's why we welcome the opportunity to be on shows like yours. We've also had other appearances on national television with both the networks and the cable news channels. Any opportunity we get to bring this again to the forefront, because we can't get complacent, and we know that COVID is you know, the front of everyone's mind right now. They're very concerned about it, but all these traditional issues still exist for our children as they return to school, and we must not get complacent thinking that those have gone away just because they've been superseded in the news media. So we really appreciate the opportunity to come out here and do that. And we have our website, standwithparkland.org, with our resources page, with our media tab, and doing our part to get the word out. We also have worked with, as April mentioned, the folks at schoolsafety.gov, which is the website. But behind that is the Federal Clearinghouse of Best Practices for School Safety. And that group we've continued to work closely with. We've had webinars that are available to bring this back to the attention of the professionals. Just a few weeks ago, and another board member, Ryan Petty, and myself were in Orlando at the National School Resource Officers Convention. Again, to work with other folks there, we teamed up with not only the NASRO leadership, but with Michelle Gay from her program, and with John Michael Keyes. Michelle lost her daughter in the Sandy Hook shooting, and John Michael lost his daughter in a high school shooting, I believe, in Aurora, Colorado. So we are constantly working on this, whether it's through the public's attention or with school and law enforcement professionals. It's a constant push on our part.
813-239-9663 if you want to get in here. Let's go to Sean from Clearwater. He's on the phone right now. Sean, do you have any comments for Tony and April, or a question?
Okay, it looks like I think we might have lost Sean there. Sean, if you're listening and you want to give us a shout back, the number is 813-239-9663. We'll get right to you. You know, guys, I want to get into state legislative questions. Obviously, that's closest to home. But I know that there's federal legislation, the Eagles Act, that you guys are watching. Can you kind of just briefly describe what that is, what it'll do, and what you guys are kind of looking for out of that proposal?
Sure. The Eagles Act is to reauthorize and provide additional funding to the U.S. Secret Service National Threat Assessment Center. It'll allow them to continue not only their research, but expand their training, which they provide free to communities once they're asked, to help with teach people about their behavioral threat assessment model. This behavioral threat assessment model is so important because it's a proactive look at, again, identifying the kids who need help and getting them the help they need before they resort to violence. The state has done, the Florida Department of Law Enforcement to create a statewide behavioral threat assessment team, which we're really happy to see. We've worked with the Office of Safe Schools up in Tallahassee with the director, Tim Hay. We've had discussions with the Florida Department of Education, with Chancellor Eric Hall. And everybody's working together to make things safer and be more proactive in identifying the people and getting them the help they need. Sadly, when a threat assessment was done on the alleged shooter of our children, it was botched by the school official because he hadn't done one in 30 years. And we weren't able to be proactive and prevent this. But the Eagles Act, again, with that reauthorization and increased funding, will be a phenomenal boost to all of our nation's students. We've had great support from our Florida legislators on that, from Mario Diaz-Balart down here, from Ted Deutsch, from Stephanie Murphy in Orlando, and John Rutherford. It's a real bipartisan effort with our Florida contingent. They really have adopted and understand why this is so important. Just to get back to one thing about the Eagles Act, it is named after the mascot at the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School. And as far as our families are concerned, it would be a great great benefit to all of us in this country and a great way to honor our lost loved ones to have the Eagles Act passed and help prevent a tragedy like the one that affected our children.
Listening to The Scoop on 88.5 WNMF. Please get involved in the conversation, 813-239-9663. Again, 239-9663, or you can email DJ at WNMF.org. April, Tony, I want to ask you about how you think we may be able to attack this larger problem of gun violence in America. I'm sort of reminded of some public health experts over the weekend that I listened to on the Sunday political talk shows who said that the best way as kids come back into school to stop COVID rates from surging within schools is to lower community transmission and around the schools in the greater, larger community. And I'm wondering if that's not a metaphor really for gun violence. That slowing gun violence in schools maybe it would be more successful if we lowered gun violence rates in the community. What do you think are the big causes of our gun control problem or our gun problem in America, gun violence problem in America, and some of the possible solutions?
Well, one of the things that we, Stand With Parkland, really advocates for, which wasn't in effect when our children were murdered over 3 years ago, was extreme risk protection orders or red flag laws. Immediately after our children's murder that was passed in the state of Florida. And what that means is that, you know, someone who owns a firearm but has shown or has, you know, has shown warning signs or things that have shown that they can be harmful to themselves or others, basically can be reported to law enforcement, and they can look into seeing whether those firearms need to be taken away temporarily. This doesn't mean that the due process rights for that person has been taken away. It's actually part of the law, but really just looks at, you know, if they're at that time where they're owning the firearm, they could be a harm to themselves or others, that firearm could be taken away temporarily. And hopefully that doesn't cause, you know, mass shooting or harm to someone else. So that's one of the laws we really would like to see, promoted federally. And one of those things is, you know, writing a law that where if states pass an extreme risk protection order, a red flag law, that they're incentivized, they receive funds and so on. And I know several senators have tried to pass that, Blumenthal, Rubio, and so on. It would be great to have everyone on board to get that done, because if that law had been passed prior to February 14, 2018 in Florida, maybe our loved one would still be here. Because the shooter had firearms, people were reporting concerns to law enforcement, but because that law wasn't in place in Florida, there was no real reason for law enforcement to take those firearms from him. And, you know, we feel that that's a law that is preventative. And many law enforcement officials have said that that is one tool that they really feel is valuable, because they can now go ahead and prevent something, you know, tragic from happening within that family or community. So that's one thing. The other thing we feel is background checks. We know they work. We would like background checks on all gun sales, not just some. We know that making sure that someone who, you know, can legally purchase a firearm can prevent something tragic from happening. So, you know, having that be passed, some people call it universal background checks, some people call it background checks on gun sales. You know, we just want the Congress to come up with, you know, passing a law that works for everyone. So, and that's what we're about. Stand with Parkland really just wants to find solutions to these, you know, these problems, not just, you know, talking from both sides, really coming to the middle and finding a solution to, you know, what we think can prevent these tragedies from happening, not just in schools, but in communities.
April, I want to stay on that for a second, because this is obviously something that has become a highly politicized topic. Anytime you have anything that is even remotely perceived as a gun control, quote unquote, measure, you know, it kind of gets painted with that partisan brush. The red flag laws were something that seemed to avoid that, at least to a certain degree. But there are other conversations that just don't seem to gain any traction, particularly in Florida, where you have a Republican-controlled legislature and executive branch. And then especially this year with the midterm elections, and of course you have our governor, Ron DeSantis, is up for re-election, and he clearly has potential presidential aspirations going on in the background as well. It's something that seems like it could be even more partisan this year, as you have people seeking election or re-election who have to make sure that they're appeasing their base, if you will. When you look at those challenges, how does a group like yours try to breach that divide and try to find some common ground, like what happened with the red flag laws, to get something passed? Because a lot of the things that groups like yours have pushed for in years past have just not gained any traction.
Well, I would say that in Florida, after our tragedy, we did have a Republican-led, you know, we had a governor, Republican governor, Rick Scott, and a Republican-led House and Senate. But again, it took conversation. It took, you know, getting people to talk about, you know, what the real points were that led to our children and loved ones' deaths, and, you know, coming up with solutions. It wasn't just shouting on both sides. It was really coming together at the table and saying, you know, look, this is what could have prevented the loss that happened that day. And, you know, we were fortunate to have people who were, you know, compassionate and listening to our concerns. our community also expressed their concerns. And I guess that's the main thing is really, it's just, you know, it shouldn't be politicized. You know, we had so much loss that day. And, you know, it was preventable. And that's the thing. It's not just one solution. It's really coming up with various solutions, but more importantly, it's really, you know, being able to talk and have those conversations. And, you know, I think that's where we're trying to go, and we see it, you know, like I said earlier, some of this legislation, we see, you know, people on both sides, Republicans and Democrats, coming up with solutions. We just need to come to the middle and find out, you know, the solution that works for everyone. It may not be perfect, but maybe it can be a stepping stone in the right direction.
If you're just tuning in to The Scoop Tuesday, I'm Janelle Irwin with Evan Donovan, and we are speaking with Tony Montalto and April Shentrup of the group Stand With Parkland about gun violence in schools as our children head back to classrooms this month. If you'd like to get in on the conversation, we had a little hiccup with our phones there for a minute, but they're fixed now. The number to call is 813-239-9663. I want to bring up the concept of school resource officers. This is something that Evan and I discussed ahead of the show, trying to kind of, you know, roadmap the program today. What we found interesting was that this is a topic where you have some people, particularly those who advocate for gun reforms, who worry that school resource officers are perhaps sometimes can be a part of the problem. And on the other side, and I know this is something that your group has talked about, that school resource officers can be, as the name suggests, a resource. Can you talk about how to navigate, how to make those public servants, because that's what they are, really be effective in schools and not a part, as critics would contend, the school to prison pipeline?
Sure. I think the key, as with most things, is training. It's selecting the right people for the job and training them to do the job properly. Being a school resource officer is different than being a cop on the street. The school resource officers can provide mentorship and guidance and be another trusted adult on campus. And those things are very important. School resource officers should be kept out of the discipline programs in schools. School discipline is an issue for the school administration and the teachers, and that's how that should be handled. And the office school resource officer should be there, again, mentors, trusted adults, people bridging the gap between the community and law enforcement. It's also vital that we look at the data. And just this year, the National Threat Assessment Center completed a new report called Averting Targeted Violence. Or targeted school violence. And in that report of averting targeted school violence, they pointed out that school resource officers play an important role in preventing that. I believe the data is that in 66% of the cases they studied, the school resource officer helped to avert the attack. The resource officer in our school did not react properly, and that caused further loss of life. However, just the other day, I believe there was an incident, it might have been New Mexico, but I'm a little sketchy on the story, I apologize, where the school resource officer stepped in and stopped further violence. We see this more often than not. We see, when you look at school resource officers and their interaction with students, it's kind of like looking at air travel. Thousands of flights are going to go on today. And if they don't have a problem, we're not going to talk about any of them. But if there is one problem, it'll make the news. Same thing with school resource officers. We ignore the overwhelming amount of positive interactions every day, and we focus on the terrible ones that we see. And those are terrible, and we do need to correct what caused those. But it's important for the communities to make good choices based on fact and based on data. So that's why we applaud the Secret Service for taking a look at that. That's why we have created another tab on our standwithparkland.org resources section where people can click on it and find data regarding school resource officers. Many stories are out there that don't make the news because they're just positive and they're helpful. And again, we understand we have to work on the problems when they occur, but we believe that selecting the correct person and providing proper training will make them invaluable for kids and hopefully protect students and teachers should the unthinkable happen.
I want to follow up on that point there, Tony, because you mentioned about the incidents and about, you know, a school resource officer responding. At the end of the day, it is still just one person, right? And obviously that's one of the reasons why you guys are looking at all of these other solutions. I was struck over the weekend when I was watching Free Solo, which is a documentary about Alex Honnold, the guy who climbed El Capitan without a rope. And he was talking about the difference between risk and consequence. And someone asked him a question about, why do you do this? It's so risky. One slip, you could fall and you'd die. And he said, actually, I like to look at things in terms of risk and consequence. I am a skilled climber, and therefore I think the risk is very small here of me doing this. But obviously the consequence is great. One mistake and there is no other consequence. He would die. In that regard, you know, the incidence of mass shooting rates, particularly at schools, is relatively small, though it's spectacularly higher than in every other country. I wonder how you get people to respond given those rates. Like, for instance, I have small children, and at the moment, I would do anything to protect them, even if it took putting a barrier around every school and a metal detector in every doorway. How do you sort of refrain from wanting to make those the measures that we use to keep our kids safe?
Well, I think, as April alluded to before, it's not just one thing. It's a constellation of solutions. That's one reason why Stand With Parkland promotes the school safety triad, which is securing the campus, better mental health screening and support programs, and finally, responsible firearms ownership. All three of those push and pull on one another to keep our students and our teachers safe. They clearly, all three of those things, failed our families on February 14th of 2018 and led to the murder of our spouses and our children at the school. So each of those has a different part. We don't want to make our schools prisons. They are places of learning. We want to keep them as warm and comforting as possible, while at the same time taking basic safety measures like securing the perimeter, having a single point of entry so we know who's on the campus. These are things we do to protect our airports, our federal buildings, they're part of the solution. Again, increasing mental health screening and support programs to identify the children or people that are having difficulties. And again, not to stigmatize them, but to get them the help they need so that they can continue to function. We all have to kind of look out for one another and try and bring solutions to the table that can keep our children and staff members safe at school.
You're listening to The Scoop on WMNF 88.5 FM. That's Tony Montaldo with the group Stand With Parkland. We're also joined by April Shentrup of the same group. And I'm here with Evan Donovan. You know, I love satire. And I think that above just being sometimes funny, I think it's powerful because it kind of makes a mockery of things that I think most people would agree should be obvious. Protecting children is one of those. And of course, you know, depending on who you talk to, people have different opinions on how to make that happen. And that's part of living, you know, in the United States, right, is the freedom to have those differing opinions. But I'm struck by a headline that The Onion, probably the most popular satire site that ever existed, they post this every time there's a tragic school shooting. The headline is, "No way to prevent this, says only nation where this regularly happens." And that's just so striking because it's satire, but it's also true. And I know we've already kind of touched on this a little bit with ways to breach the partisan divide as it pertains to conversations about gun ownership and gun regulation. But again, it's something that every time we talk about one of these tragedies, there's just a lack of substantive action, it seems. So I want to get back to that concept of, how do you make progress? And specifically with the 2022 legislative session, sort of in its early stages of kicking off here next month, is there anything specifically that you're going to be looking for statewide this year?
Statewide regarding our legislative objectives will be mostly to continue to push for the recommendations that were made by the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas Public Safety Commission, as well as the 20th statewide grand jury, which is investigating school districts and their adherence to the laws. We would like to take their recommendations and see those put into law here in Florida. As far as the firearms question and what happens after these tragedies, I'll just say that sadly, our nation did react after our family suffered our loss. We have seen 15 states add red flag laws. We now have 19 states plus the District of Columbia with some form of red flag law. That's a huge improvement. We had back in the 116th Congress, even the Republican-controlled Senate Judiciary Committee held a hearing on the need for red flag laws. That was at our request of Senator Lindsey Graham when we were speaking with him. We provided written testimony on red flag laws to the current Senate Judiciary Committee just a few months ago. We believe red flag laws are so important because they address firearms that are on the street today and on the street tomorrow. And we need to enforce the laws that we have, as well as come up with good policies to keep our nation safe. Additionally, on the federal level, following our tragedy, we had Congress pass the Fix NICS Act, which provided changes to the National Criminal Instant Background Check System. We also saw the Trump administration, while we were in the White House, speaking with him about the federal report on school safety, he announced to us that he was banning bump stocks. So there has been some progress, and we certainly support the Biden administration's push for red flag laws. So although there hasn't been the absolute solution, there have been steps that are taken. And that's one thing that Stand With Parkland wants to do. We want to take people who are willing to listen to one another and find reasonable solutions to bring those to Congress to have action, to bring those to our political leaders to have policies put in place. You're never going to change the mind of somebody who wants to take, who sleeps with their AR-15 under their pillow. And you're never going to change the mind of somebody who wants to take all firearms and melt them into monopoly pieces. And that's the problem. Those extreme views are the ones that get all the press. And we need to stop that. We need to have reasonable people have reasonable conversations and be able to find compromise. Compromise is not a dirty word. Our entire government depends on compromise. Otherwise, we get stagnation. So some of the stagnation is what we've seen now. And we're happy to say that Stand With Parkland, we've also been able to work with that. The way we do that is we work with the congressional appropriators to make sure that there's proper funding for the laws we have gotten passed, like the STOP, Stop School Violence Act, that was promoted by Congressman Rutherford and Congressman Deutsch. We've gotten that's been passed, and we want to make sure there's continued funding for the grants there that promote the physical security of schools as well as the creation of behavioral threat assessment teams. That's a vital thing. We also have gone through and asked them as they work on their infrastructure bill, when they repair schools, which is part of their infrastructure program, let's make sure we're repairing them with new things, with doors that lock from the inside, with windows that can be covered quickly. There's no need to just stick with the same old stuff. We also want to leverage reporting and technology to help reporting apps, because another thing that the Secret Service report that was released just this spring pointed out is that students hear more. There's usually some leakage by the alleged shooters. Students hear this, and we want to give them the ability to report it and have somebody take action on it. So in the wake of our tragedy, Florida leveraged the technology by creating Fortify Florida, and it's been used now for 3.5 years, and it's provided a lot of advance warning for tragedies like this and allowed our folks in charge of protecting our students and teachers to be able to do that.
Tony Montalto and April Shentrop joining us on The Scoop here today. You can take part as well, 813-239-9663 to call in. Again, 239-9663. You are listening to The Scoop on WMNF. Let's go to Jack in Hillsborough. Jack, you're on The Scoop. Go ahead.
Hi, yes, sir. Thank you for taking my call. You know, I'm just wondering how far are people willing to go? I mean, you know, for me, I don't think that cost should be an issue at all, but I'm wondering, are parents going to like school buses that have bulletproof glass in them, that have an entryway that will detect whether a weapon is being brought on a bus or not? And are they going to want their children in a school that looks like a fortress, that has a fence, an impenetrable fence around it, and an entryway that also detects whether or not somebody's coming onto the school grounds with a weapon? And are we going to do that on college campuses as well? I mean, are we going to get behind this issue as a nation and do it? Or are we just going to keep passing legislature that says, well, yeah, the money's available, but we're not really sure what we're going to do or how far we're going to take it?
Thank you, Jack. We appreciate that comment. I mean, April, Tony, I'll toss that over to you. Jack's comment sort of similar to what I was saying earlier, that as a new parent, I feel like I would do anything I could to protect my kids. And living in a society, I've actually lived in 3 other countries, obviously all of which had drastically lower rates of gun ownership than America does. And I must say, you know, it is remarkable when you're there and you sort of embed yourself in another society and you realize that threat is not there anymore. And it's an odd feeling that I had living in those countries. Do you talked about school hardening? We've talked about it a little bit here today. Is there some that's too much? Is there some measures that are too much, you think?
I would say that, you know, it's really up to the local school districts to see where they are on their level of school safety. Some school districts, are more beefed up and, you know, have more things in place, but you know, every school can go to schoolsafety.gov. There is a quick quiz on basically how what your level of assessment is for your school on security and safety. And from there, it gives suggestions on what you should do first. It could be a low-cost, no-cost solution. But really, you know, really, even myself as a parent and as an educator working in the same school district where my daughter was killed, you know, I was a principal of an elementary school, and the way I did security and safety at my school, you know, I thought was the way everyone did it. I had a school resource officer at my school full time, even though it was an elementary school, and we worked together. He got trained, and we met on a regular basis with my school staff on, you know, how we can improve safety. And I didn't realize that just, you know, my daughter's school down the road wasn't even doing that. They were allowing people to trespass on campus and ignoring students. Warnings about, you know, threats and things like that. So, I think really looking at from the school perspective, you know, what can they do now? You know, go to schoolsafety.gov, take the quiz and see. And then, you know, money seems to always be an issue. Oh, we don't have enough money, but there's so many grants available, and on that website, it'll show anyone, even parents, who can go on and what grants are available for schools and school districts to really, you know, not only harden their schools. We say harden, but, you know, we don't want it to feel like a prison, but we want to make sure that it's difficult for someone who wants to commit harm to come into school and do that. And, you know, we unfortunately know that at Marjory Stoneman Douglas, the shooter was able to just walk on campus with his rifle bag and, you know, 6 minutes. And 47 seconds later, you know, he was allowed to commit a tragic murder, a mass shooting on that campus without really no interference whatsoever. And it's a shame because, you know, as a parent, I feel guilty. Like I could have maybe helped that school if I would have known that they weren't, you know, taking safety, you know, seriously like I was at my school. But, you know, unfortunately, I learned too late. So as a parent, you know, you have resources, you know, to look at. It's not just the school. Schoolsafety.gov, I think, is one great resource for everyone to use.
You know, and I'm just going to add a little bit to that, in that, again, backing schoolsafety.gov is that clearinghouse of best practices for school safety on the federal level. And the reason it's just a clearinghouse of best practices is because what works for one community, let's say Orlando or Tampa, is not necessarily going to work in Philadelphia or in a one-room schoolhouse in Wyoming. So we didn't want to create a national law that would be very difficult for schools to adapt to. So that's why we created this clearinghouse of best practices, so each community could go in and choose what works for them. I think another vital point is involved parents. And we had talked before how students hear things prior to a shooting. We also know that that parents hear things too. And we also understand the technology that kids use today is difficult for some parents, including myself. So what we like is we've been working with a group called Safer Schools Together, and they've created a parent's guide to raising digitally responsible youth. And that's on our website, standwithparkland.org, under our resources page as well. And if you click on that, it's a pamphlet to explain what Instagram is and what all the others are that are out there. And it's to help parents be more involved. And as you had pointed out, involved parents are the ones that are going to make the difference. They are the ones that can go to the school board meetings. They are the ones that vote for the school board members. Being involved as a parent is very, very helpful. And April, could you tell them about our five questions, if you don't mind?
Yes, I was thinking that exactly when you were talking. On our standwithparkland.org website, there is a resource we call the five questions that parents should ask. And really, any parent can print this. There's a kind of like a quiz you can take, and it'll give you the answers. But basically, take this to your school. Ask your school administrators, you know, what they're doing to keep your children safe at that school. It's five simple questions, and that, you know, you can ask them and see what your administrator has to say. And if they, you know, if you feel that they aren't able to answer those questions, you can give them the resources on our page to help them with that. But really, it's just making sure that they're prepared. And I know one of the first questions asked today was, you know, school districts, some are open, some are opening up soon. You know, school districts are supposed to prepare for the upcoming school year over the summer, but it's never too late to see, you know, where they are in their preparations. And these five questions are what we feel are critical in making sure that schools and school administrators know that parents are out there. They're wanting to know how you're keeping their children safe because, you know, we trust that they are, but do we know that they are? And we are really proud of that. So please go to standwithparkland.org and look up the five questions and make sure that your school is aware that you know that you are wanting to keep their children safe, and you make it a priority so that they make it a priority.
And now I was going to go to a poll. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Just really quick, April, for those who maybe aren't next to a computer right now and might forget the website later, would you mind just running through what those five questions are briefly?
Yes. Let me pull them up real quick. But on our
I actually website, was just getting ready to do it because I have it right up here, April, and wanted to ask you perfect. About them. Does the school have an active shooter policy? Does the school train all staff members for active shooter scenarios? Does the school have a single point of entry access control during school hours? Is there a way students and staff can report threats? And how are parents notified when a threat has been made to the school?
Thank you so much, Devin. Go ahead, April.
Oh, I was going to say, and thank you, Evan, for pulling those up. Yes, and those are the many of the things that we talked about today. And again, it's really just looking at how to prevent the next tragedy from happening on a school campus. And unfortunately, we know that these things, if they were in place, could have prevented our loved ones from being taken that day. But we know they're critical because, you know, we want to make sure that, you know, students feel safe at school, staff understand what's going on at school, and parents have the knowledge to keep everyone safe.
Thank you. I'm going to take a call really quick, and then Evan has a question that I think will probably close out the show here. Let's go to Sean. Sean, what's on your mind, sir?
Oh, hey, thanks, Chanel, for taking my call. I called in a few weeks ago, and I'm sorry, I don't mean to divert from the gun safety and my condolences completely to your loss and the parents there. But mine is pertaining to COVID and just, in my opinion, like our school boards were, you know, basically handcuffed by DeSantis. I'm in Pinellas, and it's now day 4 of school being open, and my son is tested positive this morning for COVID-19. They were the only two boys in their entire class wearing a mask. And half of his teachers aren't wearing masks. So I don't have as rosy of a view as your experts there on things that are happening and all of that, because I just feel as we progress with the single party leadership in our state, the localities are just losing any sort of control. And that's basically my comment, that this just does not need to happen over and over and over. The gun safety laws and now with COVID, and it's day 4 of school. So that's what
Sean, appreciate that comment. Sean, thank you so much for weighing in. A COVID point, but certainly related to child safety, and we appreciate you calling in. I do want to end before we have to leave here, with one more question for you, Tony and April. Where are you seeing the most resistance? Where are people pushing back against you the most?
Actually, we've been very fortunate. And of course, the firearms piece is the hardest to get consensus. But with our angle of working on all the things, securing the campus, better mental health screening and support programs, and responsible firearms ownership, we are able to reach agreement and start the conversation of moving things forward. We've really worked hard on that, and we believe this is an effective strategy to bring people to the table to start a discussion. Sadly, our families have suffered the most horrific loss you can imagine, and we quickly dispense with talking points and extremist views while we're in most congressional offices or state offices. We're coming up on the end of time, I know that, and I'll just leave with the one caution that I mentioned during my trips with the Secret Service. The one thing that every community that's had a mass school shooting had in common was the belief that it could not happen to them. We're here to tell you, it can happen anywhere. Parents need to be involved. You need to protect your children. And we hope that everyone will use the resources that are available out there to come together, to find solutions, and finally get our elected leaders to move forward on all of these things to protect our most precious resource, our children.
Tony, that was so well put. And I just want to echo what Evan said at the top of the show. I don't have words to express my sorrow over the tragedy that your families and others experienced. And I thank you so much for being with us today to go over some of the things that parents can do, that the community can do, ways to hold elected officials accountable. For more information, go to schoolsafety.gov. That's a federal site, or you can go to Stand with Parkland's website, standwithparkland.com, guys?
.org.
Standwithparkland.org. Thank you so much again for being here. Thank you to those who listened. Evan, thanks as always as being my my right arm here. Stay tuned.
This is WMF Tampa.